Welcome to a special episode of JCCT Pulse. Today, we will be taking a deep dive into the newly released expert consensus document on myocardial CT perfusion imaging. Our special guests, who are the writing group chairs Ron Blankstein and Amit Patel, will join JCCT editor-in-chief Todd Valines and me to explore the big picture impact of the statement. So now I'd like to welcome Dr. Valines back to the Pulse. And we're going to discuss a little bit about what this document means for us in clinical practice and implications moving forward in this field. Welcome back, Todd.
Oh, thank you so much, Kavitha.
Yeah. And so tell us what you think about, you know, where we are headed in terms of using CTP in clinical practice and what this means for us in the wide perspective of patient care, reimbursement, and things like that.
Well, we have this document, and I would just point out to our readers that this document is so welcomed in the field. We have seen, you know, both at the JCCT and other journals, just a significant increase in the number of papers discussing the diagnostic accuracy, the prognostic value, and the clinical utility of CT perfusion. Mm-hmm. So to see this document now from the Society, and I just want to give congratulations to Amit Patel, Ron Blankstein, and the entire author group who put this together. And for our readers, I would really strongly encourage you to really dive into this document. The document obviously is very technical, and so it goes into a lot of the nuts and bolts for our readers on how to do CT perfusion.
Right.
And that's something that I think, you know, if you read a lot of papers, we all know that there are a couple different approaches, particularly with regards to static versus dynamic, and as well as the use of spectral imaging or dual energy, for example. Mm-hmm. And so this document really focuses on that. And so I'll just state regarding that is that this is a real important first step mm-hmm. into CT perfusion, much like our first document on CT guidelines for TAVR was.
Yes.
And so now that we as a society can look at a document and say, okay, this is how we think this should be performed if you're going to do it clinically. The hard questions now come, and they're really the ones you just asked. Is how do we integrate this? Is it ready to be integrated into clinical practice? And I think my perspective is that we are going to see that take place over the next 5 to 6 years, and probably and maybe even in a more accelerated fashion than we anticipated. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, I'm a clinician like you, Kavitha. I do a lot of cardiovascular imaging with CT. I think that it's important to say up front that the strength of coronary CT and cardiovascular CT probably will always be its ability to accurately assess for coronary atherosclerosis, not just stenosis, but the degree of atherosclerosis. We all know the diagnostic and prognostic utility of that. And so that will always be what sets CT, in my opinion, apart from any other modality, this ability to see even small degrees of atherosclerosis and to change treatment and prevention. Mm-hmm. But I think where CT perfusion is so exciting for me is that it takes us to a patient population that we typically would not do cardiovascular CT. We now know that the technology is getting more accurate with regards to improved image quality. The radiation doses are getting lower. And we are now using faster scanners and better detectors. We are more confident to do cardiac CT in patient populations that were at higher risk and perhaps we would have avoided in the past.
Right.
And so having a technique like CT perfusion, much like many of the other techniques that we can talk about, like CT-derived FFR, allows us to still give answers when answers are challenging based on anatomy alone.
Yes.
And I think that's what I'm most excited about. So while CT perfusion won't be maybe the sole reason that we're doing CT in many patients, it will allow us to consider CT in patients that we might not have otherwise, where CT might be the best or only non-invasive test for some of our patients. We're getting, you know, they maybe have had SPECT imaging or PET imaging. There's still some clinical equipoise. These are other techniques that assess perfusion. We don't want to take them to the cath lab. Maybe they're not a candidate for MRI. We know there are multiple other modalities that can assess myocardial blood flow and perfusion, where CT has never really, I don't think, realistically been thought of as providing that on a playing field comparison to those other modalities. And I think now we're seeing from the literature that in fact it can.
Yes.
The data is progressively gotten better. There have now been numerous, you know, randomized clinical trials that have looked at CT compared to CT perfusion. You know, I think back to some of the work done by Gianluca Pontone and Daniele Andrini, who are two of our associate editors for the JCCT, the perfection study, you know, showing that this can be done in a very efficient manner. You can do these in less than, well under an hour, if not half an hour. And that if you compare it to even things like CTFFR and invasive FFR, that it has comparable accuracy when using invasive FFR as a reference standard, for example, in the perfection study.
Yeah.
So I think that data and now comparing that with how to do this. So this is something that is really now going to propel the field forward. I think a lot of labs who haven't been doing this, maybe they've been on the sidelines kind of waiting for a document like this, they may consider doing it clinically. Now, the real challenge in the United States, of course, is that currently there is no CPT code for reimbursement for this. And so people doing it certainly would not get paid for it as of yet. And that's where the society is really going to have to, I think, you know, partner with the CT community, the clinical community, and assess, is there a need for this? Is there a demand for this? And if so, then I think we're going to have to try to move the needle to including this as a viable additional procedure that should be used in some patients where anatomy alone is insufficient. Just like we saw with CTFFR and how the society and the community embraced that technique in appropriate patients.
Yes. Yeah. And what do you think about the nuances of interpretation of CTP and how we as imagers might need a little, you know, experience and skill in interpretation?
Well, you know, certainly that is the biggest concern. You know, anyone who has interpreted perfusion imaging, this is not just unique to CT. This is perfusion imaging for MR. This is perfusion imaging using other modalities such as SPECT or PET. There's certainly in all of these modalities is high variability in interpretations. And we've seen this in the ischemia trial where we saw a significant difference between interpretations for perfusion imaging, particularly with SPECT, between core labs and clinical reads. And so what you really highlight is the need for education and training, because most people doing cardiovascular CT, this is not something that's probably that they're used to doing, that they've been trained to do. I mean, certainly we can all see large perfusion defects on first pass perfusion, but looking at, you know, subtle perfusion differences with pharmacologic stress is a skill that I think will require some education and training. And again, I think this is where the society and the journal can hopefully help in this area, because you really don't want to champion a technique unless there's high precision.
Yes.
And that's really what we need in this field is high precision. Now, I think that the optimism is that not just education and training, but potentially additional or novel technologies may help us with this. And this is where I think the value, potential value of machine learning and the various forms of artificial intelligence might aid readers in their ability to be reproducible and accurate. It is certainly, just like with any modality, it's prone to certain artifacts and learning that those artifacts and how to recognize those, prevent those, correct for those is going to be paramount. And of course, this is not a technique that should be used just liberally. It does come with some additional radiation, all that dose is getting smaller. This is not something that we should be doing in patients unless there's real clinical equipoise about the ischemic burden related to what was seen on the coronary angiogram, in my opinion.
Yeah, such great points. And these kinds of things really excite me about all the possibilities that the field opens up, like you just said, for us as clinicians, as imagers, as researchers, and for the development of new technology and moving the field forward.
Yeah. In my closing thoughts, I would just add that the research that's going on in this area, you know, we at the journal, it's remarkable to see the proportion of manuscripts that we get that are in the field of perfusion imaging, whether it be infarct imaging, now some developing technology that's looking at imaging the degree of fibrosis using CT, as well as stress perfusion imaging. That was such a minor proportion of our submissions, even just 3 to 5 years ago. And there's clearly a lot of work being done around the world. There's clearly a lot of interest in this. And so I think we're only going to see the technique continue to get refined. The question I always get is it ready for clinical use on a routine basis? And I think, you know, certainly if you're at labs that do this and do this well, it probably is. And I think what we need to see is this technology translate from these very expert centers, we all know who they are, to multi-site clinical trials. Because right now, we just don't have clinical trials using this technique where it's being done at sites where they're not large research biomedical engineering sites that do this well already. Can this translate to the more clinical community-based imaging practices? And that's really where we need to look at the technology and see if it can make that transition smoothly, effectively, accurately, and safely. And I think we really need to see that before we can champion this on a broad scale perspective as a real option. But I think, yeah, certainly sites that know how to do this, that do it well, that do it at low radiation, at low contrast doses, and if you can avoid going to the cath lab, and I think that's very exciting. And in the U.S., that would require, again, some advocacy work to establish a CPT code and some formal approval of this technology within your pick list, so to speak, of approved testing within the field of cardiovascular imaging. So I think the SCCT has got some work to do in its partnership with other imaging societies to maybe more formally recognize this as a test, as the test and the evidence matures, and as we wait on these multi-center trials that aren't just done at expert sites.
Yes. Yeah, lots for us to think about as we take in this wonderful document. Thank you so much, Todd, for your thoughts on this modality and how we move forward. And congratulations on publishing this, and hope to talk with you soon.
I look forward to it. Thanks so much for all that you do, Kavitha, for the journal and the society.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye now.
I'm incredibly pleased and happy to invite Dr. Amit Patel from the University of Chicago and Dr. Ron Blankstein from Brigham and Women's Hospital to discuss this wonderful expert consensus document on myocardial computed tomography perfusion imaging. Welcome, Amit and Ron.
Thanks, Kavitha.
Thanks, Kavitha. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's so great to have you both and to be able to discuss myocardial CT perfusion imaging, which is somewhat new for a lot of CT imagers. So could you just give us like an overview of what CTP imaging is and how it's done?
I guess I'll start, but typically when we do cardiac CT, we've been focused on the coronary arteries. So when we do CT perfusion, we're instead focusing on the myocardium. And this is something that's actually been done with CT for well over 10 years. In fact, some studies going back even far longer than that. And initially, people realized that you can see myocardial infarctions on CT if you look at the myocardium because they have hypoattenuation. The wall tends to be thin, perhaps will be calcified. But the field of CT perfusion takes it a step forward and said instead of just looking at rest myocardial perfusion, you can give a vasodilator medication the same way we do during a nuclear stress test or a stress MRI and give that at the time of a CT scan. And as a result of that, when you time the scan correctly, you can look at myocardial perfusion and look at relative differences in blood flow to the myocardium such that areas that are not getting enough blood flow will be hypoperfused. So typically a stress CT or CT perfusion would involve two acquisitions, one during stress. And to date, the agents that have been studied were adenosine, mostly adenosine and regadenoson, and then a second acquisition during rest. And that's also the same acquisition where the coronary arteries will be evaluated and interpreted.
Thank you, Ron, for giving us an overview. So Amit, what is the what are the criteria for patient selection? Who are these patients that would benefit from CTP?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's one of the things that the committee really put some thought into. Normally, when a patient with chest pain is going to undergo coronary CTA and you're going to identify some degree of coronary stenosis. But what we really want to know is those patients who have a severe coronary stenosis there that's hemodynamically significant. And so I think CTP becomes really valuable as you start to get into those patients that have moderate or severe coronary stenoses, and you want to try to elicit and determine whether those lesions are ischemia producing. It would be those patients that would be most likely to benefit from coronary revascularization. And the CT perfusion helps us nail down the coronary lesions, which are most likely causing a patient's symptoms.
Yeah. And so some limitations to other kinds of technologies like this, with CT being a one-stop shop kind of a deal, is, you know, the presence of coronary stents or bypass grafts, such as with FFRCT. But that's not a limitation for CTP, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Because we're looking at the myocardium itself and the anatomy of the coronary arteries, and any artifacts in the coronary arteries are really not a problem for CT perfusion. It's much more akin to what we would see with nuclear stress testing or stress MRI or PET stress testing, where we're just looking at the myocardial perfusion and whether there's ischemia present.
Yeah, exactly. And so that becomes really attractive, you know, in terms of what patients to include. But then there are many situations when, you know, CTP should not be done. And Ron, what are your thoughts on that?
I think, of course, test selection always important. On one end of the spectrum are patients who don't have obstructive disease, where ischemia is really not something that's on the differential. So obviously, if patients just have minimal or mild stenosis, for the majority of those patients, there would not be a role for for stress testing, whether it's with CT or with other modalities. On the other end of the spectrum are patients that perhaps their disease is so high grade and they're very symptomatic that, you know, perhaps going straight to the cath lab might be a very obvious next step. So adding a stress test in those cases is not going to be helpful. So it's really when there's uncertainty about the functional significance of lesions, that's when any stress test would be most helpful, with a stress CT just being one of those options. Of course, the advantage of a stress CT is that you could do at the same setting, on the same machine at the same time, both a test that looks at the coronary anatomy and a test that looks at the myocardial perfusion. But obviously, in some settings and in some hospitals, that might be a very attractive combination. And other centers, perhaps there's other tests that I think would also be very reasonable tests to do.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, for a CT imager, I think one area that needs more clarification is the technique and the difference between static and dynamic imaging. I wonder if you could give us a rundown on what those things mean and the techniques.
Yeah, absolutely. So static CT perfusion is a situation where, you know, the vasodilator has been given and then the contrast is infused once you've achieved hyperemia, and you're going to try to predict when the myocardium is fully opacified and acquire your image only during that single time point. And so timing becomes quite critical. On the other hand, with dynamic CT perfusion, what you're going to do is actually acquire a series of images every single heartbeat for, you know, a certain number of seconds that allows you to capture the contrast as it's transiting through the different chambers and perfusing into the myocardium so that you can be sure to get the optimal myocardial enhancement. With static CTP, you only have that singular image that's acquired during peak enhancement. And so the type of quantification you can do in some way is limited, and it's much more amenable to just qualitatively looking at the image and then maybe measuring Hounsfield units and that sort of thing for identifying areas that are ischemic. On the other hand, with dynamic CT perfusion, because you have all the information about the amount of contrast you're giving, the rate at which it's being given, and then you know how the signal is enhancing in the myocardium as the contrast perfusing through it, you can actually start to quantify things like myocardial perfusion reserve and even myocardial blood flow in more absolute terms. So it becomes much more quantitative but it comes at the expense of increased radiation exposure to the patient.
Ah, I see. So speaking of radiation exposure, how much incremental a radiation dose is it to a patient?
Well, there's been multiple protocols, and like everything we do in cardiac CT, the type of equipment you use and the settings that one selects are very important. But I think as a rule of thumb, I think it generally doubles the radiation dose because you're doing two separate acquisitions, one at rest and one at stress. And potentially, if you do a multi-phase acquisition to like a wall motion, it's going to be more. But I think at least doubling the radiation from a rest coronary CTA. I think the good news is a rest coronary CTA and many contemporary scanners can be done at fairly low doses at 2 to 3 millisieverts. If you double that, you can actually do a whole rest and stress for around between 5 and 7 millisieverts, and multiple studies have shown that. When you look at the dose of older studies, the dose of in those cases usually have ranged between 10 and 15 millisieverts for doing a comprehensive protocol that includes rest and stress.
I see. And so are you both using CTP routinely in your clinical practice?
We are not in my center. We were involved in both of the multi-center studies that were used to validate this. And in both of those studies, very comparable results to other imaging techniques. But in our imaging center, we have multiple other imaging techniques that are available. We do a lot of PET studies, which are very robust, stress MRI, nuclear, and other techniques. So I feel that in centers like ours that already have many other techniques that are available, and frankly, these other techniques have been around for longer and they're better validated and have better data behind them at this stage, from a clinical perspective, we're still going to use many of the other techniques that are available. When I talk to colleagues around the world, there are countries where other stress tests may be less available. And in those situations, CT perfusion might be much more attractive.
Yeah. And what about you, Amit?
Yeah, at our center, we use it clinically, but as part of a registry of patients. I think one of the challenges in the United States of using it on a routine basis is that there's no current uniform reimbursement plan for CTP.
And I think that's a great point. At this point, if you were to do a CT perfusion, you're certainly not going to get paid for all the extra resources that this takes. So that's certainly an important factor.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, about reimbursement and where you both see this headed in that reimbursement direction.
At this stage, we obviously still have challenges relating to improving coronary CTA reimbursement. But certainly, I can envision down the road that there's many add-on codes and add-on things that we will need to work on for reimbursement. Those will include things like plaque analysis, CTFFR analysis, but also CT perfusion. So I can envision in terms of things that we as a society will want to work towards reimbursement in the future is all three of those.
Yeah, exactly. And, speaking about the reimbursement issues, do you think we need more clinical data on CTP? Most of the data that come out of this area within CT are from very specialized centers who are very good at doing this. How do you see this applicability kind of expanding to a clinical CT angiography setup?
Yeah, I think the acquisition actually is, even though there are details, and this is why we put together this guideline so people can see how to acquire it, you actually don't need as good of a spatial resolution for CT perfusion as you do for a coronary CT angiography. The myocardium, if you think of it, you just don't need as good of a resolution in general. The interpretation is tricky. It does require some experience to know how to recognize various artifacts. I think the interpretation is actually more challenging than the acquisition in some scenarios.
Yeah.
Back to your initial question, absolutely we need more data at this point. Even though there's multiple single center studies, they're all focusing on the diagnostic accuracy compared to other techniques. And I think this is, of course, an important first step to show that the diagnostic accuracy is good. But beyond that, I think there's room for much more data. There's very little data on the prognostic value. even though it seems to make sense that when there is ischemia, that those patients prognostic are going to do worse. And we've seen some small series showing that, but I think there's more data in that regard that are needed. But ultimately, this is still a relatively new field and does require more data.
And it's interesting, even though it is relatively new field, the extent to which it's been validated against invasive fractional flow reserve is actually higher or more than several of the other more commonly used perfusion imaging modalities. So you do get the sense that, you know, if you believe in the physiology aspect of it, that, you know, the multi-center trials will bear out that it has a real clinical value akin to a stress MRI or PET or nuclear.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, the interpretation model that you suggest in the document is a semi-quantitative analysis. So that should also help us, you know, with this interpretation, you know, of CTP, which tends to be time consuming. And as you said, Ron, it requires a certain degree of skill and expertise to recognize artifacts and things. So do you think that this also provides an opportunity for development of, you know, more sophisticated software for interpretation and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are already commercially available softwares that do help with displaying the perfusion and the coronary anatomy. There's also vendors who even have now quantitative perfusion analysis, which lets you measure the perfusion in terms of blood flow. But I think, you know, what's probably still missing is software where you actually directly fuse together the coronary anatomy and the myocardial perfusion map, which would probably make it a little easier to visualize. You know, the coronary stenosis is in the mid LAD, and here you can see very clearly that in the just distal to that coronary lesion, you can see the perfusion defect there. I think that level of integration is probably not available yet, and hopefully someone will make, you know, we'll have software that can make that happen. So that would be very helpful.
Yeah, that would be super cool to be able to see both the level of stenosis as well as the degree of ischemia on the same image, as in the same modality image. So that's fantastic if we could have that someday.
And the ability to fuse or to look at the coronaries and the ischemia and register the images is a big advantage for CT perfusion relative to other imaging modalities. Because even if you have a coronary CT and then you need to tie it together to, you know, a stress echo or whatever, you know, you have to mentally put that picture together. And CT really, you know, it's all, everything's co-registered, the patient's on the table, they haven't probably moved in between, and it'd be much easier to tie all that information together.
Yes. Yeah, that is super cool. So Ron, how do you think CTP complements, or how do you see this CT perfusion evolving along with other technologies such as CT-FFR?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. There has been studies shown that in fact, it could be complementary in some cases. And they look at different things. So CTFFR is a lesion-specific ischemia. So if you have a particular lesion and you're trying to assess the hemodynamic significance of that lesion, I think in that case, CTFFR, you know, certainly has a good data, how it performs compared to invasive FFR. If that's an isolated lesion, then looking at myocardial perfusion, you know, may provide some information on that as well. But on the other hand, myocardial perfusion, whether it's with CT, MRI, or nuclear techniques, integrates all the disease in the vessel, both the focal epicardial stenosis, perhaps diffuse atherosclerosis in the vessel, and also microvascular dysfunction. But the integration of all of that potentially prognostically might be more important, even though if you're trying to decide on revascularizing a particular lesion, there may be some advantages at looking at a lesion-specific measure. So I think I see a role for both of these, and I see a complementary value. And I think an even trickier question, which I thought you were going to ask, or maybe it's your next question, so sorry to jump ahead, is in light of the ischemia trial, you know, how how important will it be to measure all of these? And of course, it will depend a lot on the patient. So patients who are highly symptomatic, and we already know that they have stenosis on CT, perhaps these measures become a little bit less important. So I think that's another thing for us to keep an eye about towards the future. I see in the future continued development of both of these techniques. I think CTFFR is going to continue to grow and evolve, and I think maybe more widely adopted with time. And similarly, I see ongoing research that's going on with CT perfusion, where CT perfusion is going to improve over time as well. I think perhaps an advantage of CT perfusion today is that sites can do everything in their own shop. They can do the rest perfusion, the stress perfusion, and interpret right then and there the myocardial perfusion analysis and the coronary CTA. Of course, the downside is the extra radiation associated with that. And on the other hand, CTFFR has the advantage that you only need one image acquired at rest, so lower radiation, no need for a stress agent. But still today, at least under the most common model, is it's a send-out test that will need to be performed.
And in addition to that, as exciting and excellent as CTFFR is, there is kind of a gray zone when you get the CTFFR interpretation. You know, CTFFR values in the moderate range, let's say roughly between 0.72 and 0.85, you know, you really, the correlation with invasive FFR starts to be a little less robust. And so there may, you know, be a complementary role of CT perfusion in kind of that intermediate CTFFR zone where you could really use some confidence building as to whether the coronary lesion is truly hemodynamically significant. You may not have any questions if your value is completely normal or if it's, you know, severely abnormal. But in the middle, I think it's clinically a little more complicated.
Yeah, that's such a good point because, you know, understanding that there it is a continuous value and there isn't like a discrete cutoff. And there are these intermediate values where, you know, there is ambiguity about what to do with that particular lesion becomes an issue. And that's such a good point that that's where a modality like CTP can really fill in that gap. Yeah, so thank you both so much for your time and to put this wonderful document together along with the rest of the committee. And I would highly encourage all of our listeners to read this document, especially if you're trying to understand CTP and all of its practical nitty-gritty, so to speak. This document addresses them very, very beautifully. Additionally, for those of you who don't know, Ron Blankstein is the president of SECT, and the three of us would love to see you all at the SECT annual scientific meeting coming up in Seattle, July 16th through the 19th of this year. Please come. And Ron, thank you so much for all your work with the SECT and for leading us forward.
Absolutely, Kavita. I also will second that. I hope everybody comes to our annual meeting in July in Seattle. But I also have to say what an honor it is to be on this podcast. This is a podcast that Kavita has developed, and I've listened to every single podcast. I love listening to these. So now I'm really thankful for the invitation to actually be part of it.
Thank you. And thank you also, Amit. And I know you both have such clinically heavy days, and it's so wonderful that you took the time to be here today. Thank you again, and hope to see you both soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on JCCT Pulse. Please make sure you subscribe to the show so that you will never miss an episode. If you would like to read the articles we discussed today, they are available online along with the full issue at journalofcardiovascularct.com. And this link is provided in the show notes as well. SECT members receive online access to JCCT as part of their membership. See you next time. Thank you for listening.